so much for joining us on Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. Well, she says it a little bit different. That's my interpretation of what she says. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. A very simple, quick science lesson is basically the caterpillar dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. That's not enough, though. It hasn't finished struggling. It then has to fight its wings and get its wings strong to get out of the cocoon so it can be taken everywhere that it needs to go and wants to go. None of that can be easy, but neither is busting through societal limits placed upon people. Before I bring my guest on today, as usual, I'm just going to remind you to like, subscribe, and share so that you don't miss an episode of Hashtag No Limits. I have amazing guests doing incredible things, and you don't want to miss learning about any of them. So be sure to like, subscribe, and share. Also, if you are watching live, give us a hashtag live and where you're watching from. And if you're watching in the replay, give us a hashtag replay and where you're watching from. All right, enough about me. Let's bring on Michael. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. That's good, I guess. What would make you awesome?
First of all, I came from a unique background. I was born with a rare genetic fatal disease known as the Mintz syndrome. The Mintz syndrome symptoms include born with adult spleen instead of adult liver, born with adult spleen instead of an infant spleen. I was also born with no antibodies, so basically my immune system was attacking itself. And infants were usually born with this disease usually do not live past the age of 3. And as you can see, I survived it.
Yes, you did.
And every 10,000 infants who were born with it, there's only 2 survivors. I'm one of the 2 survivors.
That's incredible.
Was one of the people who died with it and never was brought back to life. Like I did.
Wow.
Plus, I was born with epilepsy and epileptic seizures. And I was completely healed of epilepsy in 4th and 5th grade. I don't even take medicine for it. I still haven't had seizures till this day and don't take medicine till this day.
How did that happen?
Many people can say they can overcome epilepsy.
Right. How were you completely healed of your epilepsy?
What?
How were you completely healed of your epilepsy?
I was actually in my swimming pool in my backyard, and there was a light shining down from heaven, lifting my epilepsy out of my system. The next morning, my adoptive mom took me to my neurologist in Oakland Children's Hospital. She did the EKG, and the neurologist, Dr. Shanahan, said, it's a miracle. 6 months ago, I diagnosed him with epilepsy and stuff, but now he completely not have it anymore.
That's beautiful. Praise God for that. Okay, so continuing on with your story, go ahead.
When I was 2 years old, my biological father set the house on fire with my 2 older sisters and my both mom in it. And then when I was 3 and a half, then eventually my biological father was arrested for arson and attempted murder and child endangerment because of it. Eventually was banned to from Oklahoma and went in order to move out of Oklahoma, and we moved back to California. And then in Bakersfield, once they got back to Bakersfield, my both mom divorced my biological father and got custody of me and my 2 older sisters. Then which my both mom met Troy Hall. And Troy Hall beat my both mom, which I witnessed, and raped my 5-year-old sister when I was 3. And he also threw me against wall head for a sack of football. He also tried to go over the Antioch Bridge with my 2 older sisters, myself, and my both mom in the car. And my both mom grabbed the steering wheel and turned the steering wheel in the opposite direction of the Antioch Bridge wall, saving our life.
Wow.
And then also was in 5 foster homes, 1 pre-adopt home, And I was also eventually adopted out. My adopted mom, who was an attorney, specialized in disability law and constitutional law, taught me how I could use my tragic past to make a difference in the lives of others by becoming a criminal prosecutor attorney and become a preschool teacher so I could spot the signs of abuse and spot the signs of bullying in the classroom. And so despite my tragic past, despite being a foster, despite being abused as a child, I never turned to drugs, never turned to gangs, never turned to the path of crime. In fact, I became a preschool teacher through the state of California and state law so I could become a criminal prosecutor, and so I could prosecute abuser instead of becoming an abuser. So I actually became a hero reborn.
The title of today is From Victim to Victor. And absolutely, what you just described is both heart-wrenching and inspiring at the same time. I am seriously fighting back tears right now, listening to what you have gone through and just the amount of things that you have overcome and the limits that you have busted through, to put it in, you know, with the show's theme. I feel like I want you to go into more details of how that happened for you, because obviously, unlike the epilepsy, it didn't just happen overnight. Mm-hmm. What was school like for you?
I was fortunately to have a next door neighbor who worked for social services.
Okay.
Jerry Deckel was a very close friend of my adopted mom. And she lived like 4-5 houses down from us. And my adopted mom could not have any children of her own. So she turned to Cherry Decker and asked her, "Do you have any foster children who really needs a good home?" And Cherry Decker told my adopted mom, "Yes." And she introduced me to my adopted mom.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
Cherry Decker told my adopted mom, "If you don't take them in, then he will go to the orphanage." And what's so difficult is that me and my two older sisters, Lillian and Marty, were all epileptic.
Okay.
And combined with my ADHD, it was hard to and most difficult to place all three of us in the same foster home due to none of the family could handle all three epileptic combined with my ADHD.
Right. And that happens often, even if all children have quote unquote normal abilities, that if there are siblings, it's very difficult to place the siblings together. So were you and your sisters adopted by your adoptive mom or were your sisters? Okay.
I was adopted by Estrella and Chuck Horn. Marty was adopted in Pinole by the Allers. Lillian was adopted by the Greason in Concord, California.
Okay.
But the thing is, Lillian grew up in Concord, over the hill from where I grew up. We didn't even know we were that close together.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if any of you guys heard of the live action movie, The Parent Trap.
Uh-huh.
Me and Marty was in a real life parent trap situation.
Oh, okay.
But unlike the movie is about two identical daughters, one raised by the father, one raised by the mother, in mm-hmm. two different parts of the world. But right. in my situation, it was one brother and an older sister who was like a year than I am. And we were raised by two different adopted families who sent us to the same camp and didn't know we were brothers and sisters.
Oh, that's how you found each other. Okay.
The thing is, we didn't know we were brother and sister because Marty's adoptive parents told her that she was legally their family because I was mm-hmm. thrown against the wall head first. I don't remember having a sister named Marty. And plus, also, I was born as Franklin Edward Metcalf Jr., so I literally changed my name from Franklin to Michael. So, and that's the other reason why Marty didn't know I was her biological brother, because I didn't have my name, Michael, right. Franklin at that time, because I legally changed it by the courts. But yeah. Marty also don't remember me because she actually, the difference between Marty and me and Lillian, seizures, is Marty could sense her seizures coming on. She has an aura. So she sees auras, and her aura will tell her when her seizure is coming or not coming. Me and Lillian couldn't do that. So Marty, one day when Marty was sensing her seizures through that aura, she actually literally bumped her head against the coffee table, blocking me and Lillian out of her mind. So she didn't know. Oh. She don't remember having a brother and a sister.
Okay, well, so now you have to, if neither of you remembered even having siblings, what was it that you figured out that you were siblings? What happened?
The thing is, our older sister, Lillian, eventually reunite with Marty. And she told Marty's adopted parents that she was going to take Marty out to Sizzler. But instead, she took Marty to my home in Pittsburgh, California for my 19th birthday. That's how we found out.
Oh, wow. Surprise!
thing is, when me and Marty was my camp counselor at Camp Crimp, I was the camp four. And because we didn't know we were brother and sister, we actually fell in love and started dating. Didn't even know we were brother and sister.
Right.
So the day that me and Lillian reunited us.
Oh my goodness.
Which is very different from the movie Parent Trap.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. Definitely.
Which not many people could say they were in a real life Parent Trap like that.
Right. And I know, and I've heard of situations like yours where there is that attraction between siblings who don't know that they're siblings because of that like biological connection, even though you're not aware that you're biologically connected. Mm-hmm. So I've heard of a few of those stories like that. So, and I just want to say, hi, Fran from Southern Illinois. Thank you for joining us live. Okay, so
bullied. The thing is, one day I had a seizure in front of the whole cafeteria, so all the students, all the faculty, because the thing is, when I was first met my adopted mom and my adopted dad, Jerry and the CPS was too scared to tell my adopted mom and my adopted dad that I was an epileptic because they were scared they would not take me because I had so many experience of people turning their backs on me because I was epileptic and ADHD. So one day I had a seizure in front of the whole cafeteria. And nobody was known what's going on until after the ambulance was called, took to the Oakland Children's Hospital, and I returned to school, and they told me I was epileptic. So, and because of that, I had a lot of people, one of them, frankly, told his parents, his mom, what he saw, and they moved out of the state and out of the country because he was so terrified because of that. Then all the other half of the students bullied me because of it, called me a freak, while other students felt more sympathetic and actually stayed by my side and be friends with me. So because of that, I didn't have that many friends.
So when you have your seizures, do you have the, obviously, if everybody saw it, you have the kind where the tremors actually are obvious and they're outside
I have blackouts. I have, I have, the petite mal and the grand mal. I had all three.
Okay.
While Marty has the only the grand mal, and Lillian had the fever seizure. So the only way that she will get her seizures, which Lillian don't have seizures anymore. She don't even take medicine for it. Marty still have them.
Okay.
But the thing is, when ever Lillian has a seizure, she has a fever, and the fever induces the seizures.
Right. Okay. Thank you for explaining that because, yeah, there might be people that didn't understand it. And so the grand mal are the kind where I think that's what people realize that someone's having a seizure because things are twitching, the eyes might be rolling back, things like that. Mm-hmm. A petite mal or a petit mal, that can just be
Just the Fingals or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the blackout seizures, obviously, it's like you pass out basically. Right. So, and then the fever seizures, as you said. So I appreciate that you described those.
But the thing is also dizzy spells also falls under epilepsy.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. My biological dad has dizzy spells and he was also epileptic too. So what dizzy spells is you start getting slow speeds mm-hmm. and you get dizzy at the same time.
Okay.
So, and stuff. Plus I was also born with speech impediment. When I was, first met my adopted parents, I could not pronounce all 26 letters of the alphabet.
Okay.
And my adopted mom put me through a lot of speech therapy and look how improved I am speaking.
Yes, absolutely. You are a pretty good speaker, if I may say so.
Thank you. I wish you don't expect of someone who has speech impediment become an amazing public speaker despite of it.
Right. Yeah. Again, that's one of those limits that you are busting through when, mm-hmm. you know, society and probably in the doctor or the speech pathologist heads, whoever, you know, first met you and found you that you were unable to make those sounds in their own minds. And this is where the hashtag no limits come from. It's that thinking limiting potential where, oh, this is, you know, they're never going to be able to be a public speaker or be a popular public speaker or.
Like my uncle the thing is my adopted uncle always says, you can't do this. You can't do this. You'll never be a good public speaker because you have speech impediment.
Mm-hmm.
My adopted father called me a liar when I wasn't even lying. I would even try to provide evidence I wasn't lying. He wasn't willing to look at my evidence. My adopted grandfather disowned me when I was 12 because he never understood me at being a disabled and how to work with people like me. So I didn't have a positive male role model that I should have had.
Right.
And it's because of my disability.
So we've talked about the epilepsy. We've talked just now a little bit about the speech impediment. What about the ADHD? Go ahead.
All right. First of all, before I got my ADHD was so bad when I was in junior high school. One day I was actually attending Hillview Junior High in Pittsburgh, California. And my ADHD was so bad, I actually ran up and down the classroom, jumping on desks, disrupting classroom, disrupting the lunchtime. And it's because back then I was on Ritalin, and Ritalin actually did the opposite of that. Ritalin was supposed to calm me down, but because I was born indirectly out in incest, which I was speaking in a few minutes, it actually did the opposite effect and made me more hyper. The thing is, my biological dad, Edward Metcalf, Senior, his parents was fourth cousins. His grandparents were biological sisters. My biological grandfather, Lonnie Metcalf, mom, and my biological grandmother on my dad's side, May Cole, mom, were biological sisters. And because of that, my biological grandfather impregnated his fourth cousin with my dad. And so my dad would be born directly out of incest, while I was born indirectly because I'm my dad's son, not my grandparents. And because of that, it multiplied my IQ level. It multiplied my intelligence, multiplied my male traits of my ADHD, multiplied my disability, caused me to be extremely hyperactive. And that's why the Ritalin didn't work, because I was born indirectly on incest combined with me being ADHD.
And so, I didn't mean to do that. Let me pull myself back in. So, I don't know how old you are. So
I'm going to be 49 in October.
Okay. So, special education laws then were in effect by the time you were going through school.
I was kicked out of Hillview Junior High because I was so hyperactive.
Okay.
And so I was transferred to Marcus Center in Concord for kids who can't handle themselves in public school.
Okay. So did you have an individualized education program or no?
I don't remember that much about Hillview Junior High, so I don't remember if I actually had the IEP back then at Hillview.
Okay.
and stuff. And that was like in '92. I went to St. Patrick's. So before 1992, after and stuff, and I and that was when I was in sixth grade when I got kicked out of Hillview Junior High.
Okay, and so they sent you to this other school. Then what kind of supports did they have for you at the other school?
They actually had IEP. They had IEP over there at Marcus. They had the thing is Marcus Center was divided into three categories: high school, actually technically four, high school students, junior high students, and then they also have elementary and extremely severely disabled people there in the elementary department. But they also have a OLP program on campus called Strawberry Corner, so people could learn how to cook and bake. Who all qualify for the OLP program there.
Okay.
But eventually, in 1992, I told my adoptive mom I wanted to actually move to a group home so I could get extra help. But the truth is, because my adopted dad was verbally abusive, my adopted grandfather disowned me, and also my adopted uncle was very verbal abusive too to me, my mom knows really why I went there. I wanted to go to get away from that verbal abuse because with my ADHD insecurity, it started lowering my self-esteem, especially when my adopted uncle said, you can't do this, you can't do that. I started doubting myself because of it until my adopted mom told me how she overcame her blindness, overcame her learning this, overcame her own personal struggles, not just being a Latino, being Puerto Rican, and also living on poverty, but she also overcame self-doubt as well because she'd been in that same thing when her father told her, you will not become an attorney because you're blind. You won't become a preschool teacher because you're blind. And so she personally understood where I was coming from. That's what made me connect to my mom.
That's very, very touching. There's so much. One of the things that Fran had said was, what about least restrictive environment when it came to your placement? And it doesn't sound like they were really even providing the right education for you, let alone providing it in the right location.
The thing is, my adopted mom was American with Disability Act attorney, despite being legally blind, and a special ed preschool teacher. And so she actually fought in court advocating for the potential of my civil liberties as a disabled person, being disabled herself. But the other thing is she also taught me what my rights are. She told me that I could use my creativity that associated with my ADHD and turn penal codes into a song, turn case law into a song, turn the 27th Amendments into a song, soccer memory. Turn Miranda rights into a song, soccer memory. Turn legal terminology and turn legal documentation into a song, soccer memory. Turn Iraq issue, rule of law, analysis, and conclusion into a song, soccer memory. She also taught me I could use my creativity to write court case pieces, open remarks, closing remarks, question where I ask the witnesses for her. She also taught me how to fill it out, her legal documents. And I actually prepared all her law stuff for all her cases when I was only six. Writing court cases, open remark, closing remark, questioning you after filling out her legal documentation, checking all the chain of custody, checking the food poison and the tree doesn't be violated, all that at 6 years old, despite my ADHD, despite my learning disability.
That's incredible. And again,
I was a six-year-old legal prodigy in the legal system, which you don't see a lot of six-year-old and disabled person who would know that at 6 years old.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, to be able to do all of that at such a young age is just incredible and amazing. So let's talk about what you're doing now. We've talked a lot about your schooling, So let's jump forward and talk about what you're doing now and what kind of limits you're busting through now.
All right. I was accepted in the honors program at Mission and West Valley College.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the honor classes I took at Mission College include biological science, introduction to neuroscience honors, biological science in biology of cancer honors, biological science emerging infectious diseases honor, biological science genetics and society honors, and I passed them all with a B, despite being an honor course. I also took environmental biology honors at Mission College, and I passed it with a C. I took general psychology honors, passed it with the A at Mission College. Over at West Valley, I took introduction to persuasion honor and passed it with the C. I even took music history renaissance and music history classical honors, both of them honors courses, passed it with the C. At Sac City College, I took introduction to political science, U.S. government honors, and passed it with the B. And then also history honors, dealing with from the day that our country founded to the Civil War, I passed it with the C. I was also in 2018, I was elected and placed on the Corn County ballot for the Bakersfield City School District, and I won the election.
Wonderful. Congratulations. What kind of changes did you make in that school district?
What?
What kind of changes then did you make in that school district as a board member?
I tried, but none of them was willing to listen to me. I tried to tell them. The thing is, I wanted to tell my story like I'm doing here, how far mm-hmm. I overcame despite my disability, including overcoming the abuse, but not and overcoming foster. But the Bakersfield City School District says it's illegal for you to tell your story. No, it's not. It's violation of my freedom of speech, first of all. Violation of child endangerment. Because if those abuse victims and foster youth in your system turn to drugs and gangs and crime and become the abuser, it'd be your fault because you refuse to listen. And they'd rather listen to an attorney instead of listening to someone who's smarter than a federal judge. So I resigned because of it. Because okay. I do not want to be part of the problem if those kids turn to drugs and gangs and abuse because they refuse to listen.
Sure. Right.
And I was trying to prevent it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so past that.
And then also, I was also in the student government at Sac City and at American River College as well. I was also elected to the homecoming king of Sacramento City College in 2010.
Nice.
A friend of mine hired me to actually write a music video script and produce a music video for them, which they will eventually pay me for. I have hope. Also, I'm working towards my law degree right now. I'm actually paralegal, then eventually law degree, and stuff. Also, in 2017, I uncover a government conspiracy, despite not having a law degree, despite my disability. My ex-girlfriend Shannon was arrested illegal and unconstitutional when she was trying to ask the officer to check in on me and perform a wellness check, but instead the officer asked her for her driver license and she was actually afraid for my life since our mobile home was broken into and I'm actually was home alone at the time. So she was terrified mm-hmm. for my life, but instead the officer listening to her and do what he was supposed to do, which is perform a wellness check, he asked her for a driver license and a warrant showed up. And that warrant was never showed up if he did his job and to see if I was unharmed. And wow. And so she was sent down to San Bernardino where the warrant was from, and they were never willing to show the evidence that the officer failed to do the wellness check, which is violation of the fruit of poisonous tree, because that wellness check was failed to show the if the officer failed to do the wellness check, that would be the first part of the food poisoning tree. So that means that woman should not be allowed as evidence in their court because that would be part of the food violation of the food poisoning tree because that woman would never showed up in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I told a civil rights attorney in Redondo Beach about this, he said the office, what the civil rights attorney said, the officer does not have to protect and serve. That's what the attorney told me.
Okay.
It's not required to protect and serve.
Oh.
When you look at all the police calls, doesn't it say protect and serve? Also, that's why the wellness check was put in place. Because the disabled and the elderly aren't able to protect themselves.
Right.
So the officer's job and responsibility is to protect them.
Hmm. And so you were able to uncover this a conspiracy that they were not.
Yes, because the thing is, one day Shannon, my ex-girlfriend, witnessed one of the guards saying Jesus' name in vain. And she asked the guards, please do not say our daddy's name in vain. And that San Bernardino County guard put Shannon into solitary confinement because she asked him that. And so the big mistake is they let her out twice for my visit. And she told me about it. And so I actually went to the internal affairs officer and told them about what she heard. And the internal affairs officer investigated the guard on this matter and interviewing Shannon of what she heard, and the guard was found guilty of violating her right to religion free expression clause, unbecoming of a guard, as well as violation of Shannon's freedom of speech.
Wow. That's amazing. Kudos to you for being able to do that.
Thanks. I also in 2017 I had a second job interview with the United States Department of Homeland Security, but every time I went back, the Homeland Security agent who was supposed to interview me was always out on the field, so I never had that second job interview. I had 4 recommendations from 4 different civil rights attorneys, Paul Henderson included, which Paul Henderson has ADHD like me, and he's current director of police accountability in San Francisco. Paul Henderson back then was a candidate for the San Francisco County judge, and he was surprised seeing that I know the law as well as I do.
Right,
despite my ADHD.
So let's talk about that a little bit. The fact that you do know the law so well, and it's not just that you know the law so well. How did you come to know it, and what age were you when you started figuring out that you knew it?
The thing is, one day when I was 6 years old, my adopted mom went into my bedroom and put law books in front of my face, forensic science books in front of my face, the legal documents in front of my face, case law in front of my face, the 27th Amendment in front of my face. And she said to me, at that time, I was named, frankly, I wasn't actually changing my name, Michael, until the day that I actually officially became adopted, which is when I was 10. Franklin, use your creativity that's associated with your ADHD and turn the 27th Amendment into a rap so you can memorize it. And I did. Even the questions that a lawyer would ask the witness in the witness box, she told me to turn the questions into a rap so I can memorize it, or into a song so I can memorize it.
So between the ages of 6 and 10, you turned all these law books, the 27 amendments, the questions that oftentimes are asked by attorneys to witnesses, into rap songs.
Rap and the singing, too. I did it in both versions of it, rap and singing.
Okay. Would you be willing to share a little bit of, obviously we can't go through all of that knowledge, but just a little bit of one of those raps?
Yeah. First Amendment freedom of speech, right to politicians, freedom of the press, right to religion, Second Amendment right to bear arms, Third Amendment no quarter right, Fourth Amendment protect from a reason such as Jesus, Fifth Amendment right to possession, right from self-incrimination, double jeopardy, right to own property, right to privacy, Sixth Amendment right to speedy trial, right to counsel, right to show everyone right to call witness and trial, Seventh Amendment right to stand trial in front of grand jury, Eighth Amendment protect from excessive bail, criminal punishment, Ninth Amendment right to legal travel anywhere, in our nation, in our territory, right to work, any job, we qualify, right to marry, start a family, right to free education, in good public school, right to join a political group, 10th Amendment separates the power between the state and local and federal level, 13th Amendment policy with a separate risk, arrests to the state, to the government, 13th Amendment, said you about a slave with a separate for rest of slave to the government. 14th Amendment Section 1. No state should embrace or enforce all law that take prisoners and immunity raised from the citizens of the USA. 17th Amendment protect from women, more specifically women rights and voting. 24th Amendment abolish the 18th Amendment and the 22nd Amendment talk about suffrage. And the 25th Amendment talk about impeachment, death of a president with a vice president stepping on in.
That's awesome. So if I were to ask you, so you did the amendments there. Now, I have to be honest, I didn't hear all the numbers. So I don't know if I just didn't hear them, if you were skipping them. But either way.
The thing is, I did 1 to 10, then 13th, 14th, 17th, 24th, 22nd, 25th, and 27th amendments.
Okay, so you don't actually say each of the amendments. So I was hearing you correctly.
Because the thing is, those amendments specifically talk about our civil liberties and why they're so important. Like the 25th Amendment, where actually impeachment and death of the president. So if the president created a law that actually considered unconstitutional, he could get impeached for it. So which makes it very vital. But the 1 to 10 is the Bill of Rights.
Right.
13th, abolish slavery. 14th says you can't make those unconstitutional laws. 17th, protect the civil liberties of women. That's why I mentioned those specifically ones, because those are the main important ones, because they talk about the civil liberties of these different groups.
Okay. And you just answered my next question, which was, if I asked you to talk about a certain one, can you do it? And you just did. So
the thing is, the people with ADHD are not just creative, but we also see connections that other people miss.
Right.
And because of that seeing connections that other people miss ability that associated with my ADHD, I could interpret laws between constitutional versus unconstitutional law in my brain. My ADHD will allow me to detect the discrepancy between laws that the government made and enforcing to what actually says on the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and all the civil liberties. Because I actually could cite it combined with my ADHD abilities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which makes me very powerful future attorney, because with that ability, I could put into these unconstitutional laws and human rights violations in court.
Right. Do you, since you're still studying to be an attorney, do you work with attorneys right now?
Not right now.
You said you worked with your mom. Okay.
In fact, my adopted mom died on November 29th, day after Thanksgiving.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. She actually was diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis, which is scarring of the lung tissue. So she couldn't breathe. And she was in the hospital for several months. And it was too painful for me to actually visit her in the hospital, because I've been in and out of hospital all my life, not just because of the immune syndrome, but also been in and out of hospital because of the epilepsy.
Right. And
fact, so I also was bullied too. One day, Roman Ruiz, someone that I knew from Heights Elementary, and his friends pushed me in a hornet's nest. And my adopted mother saw that when I was 12 and rushed me to and called the 911, and I was rushed to the hospital. And I was at St. Patrick's. David, a resident at St. Patrick's, came at me with a knife. And me, Margie, who I live with right now, and Zeb White, another faculty of Heights Elementary School, St. Patrick's School, and another resident, Kevin, we call him Redhead Kevin because he has red hair, witnessed David coming at me with the knife. But when we all full told the principal and vice principal of St. Patrick's of what David did to me or tried to do to me, none of the staff, other staff was willing to believe me, didn't believe Marvy, didn't believe Zeb, and didn't believe Redhead Kevin that David attacked me with a knife. So I didn't feel safe. So I was asked to move to another group. I called my parents that same night and asked my adopted parents to call, find me another group home to attend because I didn't feel safe because none of the staff believed me, believed us.
Right. Oh, that's awful.
And so I was transferred to Serendipity Diagnostic and Treatment Center here in Sacramento. And one of the residents, Colin Beaumont, molested me and stuff, but I was too terrified to tell the other staff because Colin Beaumont was a ninth degree black belt in martial arts, and he was Native American, so he was very buff. And all the students and all the faculty is so terrified of him. So I was too afraid of tell because I won't have nobody to be able to protect me because Colin could beat all of them up. Right. And so I kept it to myself. But also Willie Johnson, a staff at Willow's Acres house, pulled me off the bench where we was eating the dinner, and dragged me across the carpet out the front door, across the gravel to the cottage where I was where my bedroom is, and all the way to my bedroom. And my bedroom was at the end of that hall in the cottage. And so, which is a form of abuse.
Right.
And then also Bob, the driver of E Street, punched me in my nose and made it bleed. And it, in front of a bunch of staff and faculty, and Bob got fired because of it.
So I want to share with the audience, because some of you might be sitting listening to this story and be thinking, there's no way he got abused that many times over and over and over by this, you know, all these different situations. And I am here to tell you that the abuse, neglect, molestation, sex trafficking rates for people who are neurodiverse, which is the category that Michael would fall under because he thinks differently than the quote unquote typical people. For boys, they are 7 times more likely to have those things happen to them. And for girls, it's 12 times more likely. So I don't want anyone listening to think that what Michael is saying is made up, not true, not completely true. It is all true. And it's a very sad state of our society and one that needs to be much, 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 much less. Obviously, I wish it was zero, but of course, that will never happen. But it is something that we all need to be aware of. And I so appreciate the fact, Michael, that you do want to be a teacher in a school and are a teacher in a school so that you can see signs, because I wouldn't necessarily always recognize maybe some of the more covert kinds of signs or symptoms that a child might be showing, where, you know, I'm going to look for things like big changes in behavior or bruising or scratching or, you know, shying away suddenly when they hadn't been shy, you know, things that are to me more obvious. But I have a feeling that you would be able to pick out those less obvious signs because of what you have gone through. And before you respond to that, I just want to say that Fran finds it very interesting how you have used your ADHD to help you. And because she says it varies from person to person, it's interesting how you have used it.
First of all, respond to what Fran said. As a preschool teacher through the state of California, I actually received my teaching permit assistant teacher through the state of California and associate teacher certificate from American River College. And if you look at the college catalog of each of these different community college and even university, it was states early childhood education, then the number special needs, early childhood education, then the number twice exceptional students, early childhood education, then the number of typical needs. And so it's technically, according to the college catalog, it's the teachers who are really diagnosing them. Because without the teacher's notes that we take in the classroom, we could absorb signs of ADHD. We could absorb the signs of abuse. We could absorb the signs of bipolar or schizophrenia or other people with disability in the classroom because we are there with the students more often than the psychiatrist. It mm-hmm. makes more sense for us to really diagnosing them. And then without our notes that we take in the classroom, the psychiatrist would not know what's going on with that student unless they read that note. And according to the plagiarism laws, it's basically taking the notes that someone else took and calling your own. That's from a plagiarism. And because the teacher took the notes, not the psychiatrist, the psychiatrist is plagiarizing the teacher's notes, which is stealing.
Even if the teacher gives them permission to have the notes?
The thing is that they're supposed to work as a team.
Right.
The psychiatrists don't diagnose the students, but they should get the meds to what the teachers actually suggest them or what disability they have because they absorb those signs. Because the thing is, when the teachers graduate for the college, one of those prerequisites they need to get that AA or BS degree is the special needs class. So they could be a better effective absorbing those signs.
Right.
So they should communicate and work as a team where one diagnosed, which is the teachers, and then the psychiatrist doing the meds. Instead of the psychiatrist taking the whole credit themselves and not giving the credit to the teacher who actually took the notes.
Okay. Yeah, I see that point. And I can understand that point.
Because the thing is, psychiatrist is only there 15 minutes a day. And don't see them and see the children every day like the teachers do.
Right.
So and that's not enough time for the psychiatrist to properly and effectively diagnose a student or an inmate with disabilities. Because they're not in there that much they don't spend a lot of time with the child, while the teachers are in there 8 to 5, 5 days a week. So they are have more time with the children. It makes them more effective at diagnosing their disability.
I think in Illinois we do work in the Midwest because a lot of my family's in Illinois. We're close to Missouri, so they go to St. Louis, Missouri to the neurologists and the cardiologists and all of those ologist type doctors. Unless there's a definitive blood work test or some sort of, you know, scan that you can do, you are going to have to use the information from the other people, whether that's a psychiatrist getting that from teachers, a medical doctor getting that from their patient and the patient's family and the blood work that somebody else drew.
But the other part of it is if you look at the school board's of teachers' responsibilities and duties, it states mm-hmm. teachers' responsibilities include absorbs a child's behavior or absorb mm-hmm. a child's disability, signs of symptoms of a disability, or absorb the child's signs of symptoms of abuse, assess that what you absorb, write what you absorb down. That includes writing the symptoms of a disability, writing what you absorb when it comes to that signs of abuse, and then report on that child's behavior.
Right.
And so technically, according to that job description, it's the teacher's job to really diagnose.
Nope, because diagnose wasn't in that description.
But the thing is, absorbing that child's behavior, then you write it down. So yeah, you have this disability because it's basically, I see the symptoms of that disability.
Sure. Yeah. No, I give that. It's implied. I get what you're saying.
It's implied. That they're actually diagnosing, because without that observation, they can't come to a conclusion of what disability they have.
Right. Unless there's, like I said, a definitive test of, you know, some sort. And Fran says teachers can give input.
It's like implied main idea, the idea is not really stated by the author. It's implied that diagnosing will be part of that, because first before you could diagnose, you need to absorb of what's going on.
Right.
They will can't
hear. Yeah, absolutely. Right, absolutely.
It makes more sense for teachers are really diagnosing them. For that reason.
I agree. Yeah, I agree that it is a team effort, and it isn't just one person that should take all the credit for saying that somebody has whatever it is that they have.
Because the thing is, the psychiatrist will not know what's going on with that child without that teacher's notes. So basically, by taking all the credit themselves and leaving the teacher out of that equation, it's not fair on the teachers. Because we work so hard taking those notes. Work so hard absorbing that child. But for what? For not getting any credit for it?
You got credit because you worked together with this person. But we could belabor this point for a long time.
They call a psychiatrist in to diagnose the inmates. They call psychiatrists in to diagnose the people with special needs. I mean, they shouldn't. I mean, it's not them doing it. It's us.
Okay, well, we're going to move on from this point, because I think we could, I really feel like we're splitting hairs as to, you know, semantics here. And you having the mind that you have, I don't think it's a fair competition for me to be involved.
I'm thinking where we left off.
Yeah. So I was talking, Fran had said that she appreciates your perspective and how you use your ADHD.
So what I was going to say is that because I've been abused myself, I don't know if any of you guys actually seen Criminal Minds.
I have not. I'm almost scared to watch it because I don't.
Looking at everybody. Morgan, one of the federal agents in Criminal Minds, before he left the show, was abused by a neighborhood center's person who directed it when he was a boy.
Okay.
And he raped and murdered other kids as well. But despite that abuse, he actually became an FBI agent and now putting people like that away in jail.
Right.
And that's why I fit a lot with Derek Morgan, because I'm doing that same thing, becoming a paralegal, becoming a preschool teacher, like a spot the sign. So other abuse victims, like me and Derek used to be, could instead of turn to the route of the abuser and all drugs and gangs when it comes to foster youth, they could actually use it to inspire other abuse survivors to actually take the route they took. Because how can you properly advocate and prosecute abusers if you've never been abused yourself? And how can you properly spot the signs of abuse if you've never been abused yourself? How can you advocate for foster youth if you've never been a foster youth yourself? That's what makes me more effective as a teacher and a criminal and a future attorney, because I actually been there. It makes me more effective to actually advocate for abuse survivors and foster youth and disabled people, because I actually lived that life at first hand.
Right.
It makes it stronger and more inspiring to other abuse victims and other foster youth. Because the thing is, my adoptive mom wanted to steer me in the right direction instead of turning to drugs, gangs, and crime and become the abuser. And she did that by telling me her story, how she used her tragic past and her blindness to advocate for other abuse victims and foster youth. And so now I want to turn that same thing, what she did for me, to other foster youth and abuse survivors by becoming a preschool teacher and a future attorney, to inspire hope to other foster youth, inspire hope to other abuse, inspire hope to other disabled people who don't have hope.
Right.
And I want to give back to the community by telling my story.
That's awesome.
How I overcame and I agree with you that to become a hero, a reborn.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you that when you've gone through a situation, you are more effective because you do have a deeper understanding in a lot of ways. And I like the way that Fran just puts it, training in combination with life experiences. And I agree with both of you because there are things that I have gone through that I can better help people as they go through it than someone who hasn't gone through it. And so absolutely, I appreciate what you just said. And I just wanted to talk about really quickly, because we are going to have to wrap up here shortly. That
before you do that, I do want to say one more thing really quick. I was 12 years old, I was in my next door neighbor's house playing a game. But I didn't know they had a German Shepherd, Rottweiler mix. And so one day they took my shoe, both of my shoes, and threw it out of the back sliding glass door. And I went out there and they locked the door behind the sliding glass door behind me. And their German Shepherd Rottweiler mix came and attacked me when I was trying to bend over to get to my shoes and stuff. And the German Shepherd bit me right in my chest area. Mm-hmm. And I had to have stitches. And then a couple months before that, someone was trying to teach me how to play tennis. And I was so close to them. And the tennis racket hit me right in my right eye. And I need stitches for that. I'm also currently active in Special Olympics, softball, basketball, floor hockey, golf, bowling, swimming, as well as flag football, bocce ball, and many other sports within Special Olympics here in Sacramento.
Wow.
And my adopted mom was a professional bowler for the League of the Blind. That's how my adopted mom and adopted dad met. My adopted mom was a professional bowler for the League of the Blind, and my adopted dad was a scorekeeper of that bowling league in Philadelphia.
Oh, how neat. That's very cool. Well, Michael, thank you so much. I do want to go back, though, because I haven't really talked about how people can find you. If you would like to continue to follow and learn more about Michael, he has a YouTube channel. You can just type in, go to YouTube and just type in the @ Michael Horn, and it's MichaelHorne 9394, and that'll get you to one of his YouTube channels. If you want to go and listen to more of his YouTube raps, then you would want to look up @KingPositive2707, and you can find him there. So go check him out on YouTube, where you can learn. He shares lots of different things on both channels, and so you can check him out there. Michael, thank you so much for being my guest today and for doing what you're doing for those in California, but really for those around the world, because this podcast goes out around the world. And if you've ever been on any others, I'm sure you know they had a similar reach. And I just, from my heart, appreciate what you are doing to help people who learn differently, who have different lives than what my life and how I learn. And I'm just very appreciative. And I just want to thank you one more time.
You're good. Before we go and finished up, on that King Positive 2707 page, I don't just have all my legal raps, including the 27th Amendment and the Miranda Rights rap, but I also have a live action movie that I actually acted in as a security guard at Bakersfield College on that page. Okay. And I also have me rapping a candidacy rap for the President of the United States and a speech I wrote for it called New Hope. And on that Michael Horn page is I have me doing a marketing rap for the Sacramento City College Makerspace called the SCC Makerspace Rap. Because you don't see a lot of people mock and advertise in that format.
Right.
Also, not just that, but I'm also working on a album, and on my fourth album music tracks I wrote, I will be on my fourth track. I'll be rapping the 27th Amendment and singing the 27th Amendment by Mimi with the beats I created for it. And on my 10th track, I'll be rapping and singing the Miranda Rights by Mimi and rapping and singing Case Law by Mimi with the beats I created for those songs. all on that same album called titled Ingenious. Ingenious. And then also, I'm also working on a novel based off my true life story of how I overcame childhood abuse and bullied and discrimination and foster youth, and despite of it, what I accomplished despite of it. Also, in 2014, I did a bus boycott like Rosa Parks. But the difference between my bus boycott is mine was because I refused to get off the bus because I recycle, and the bus company would not let me bring the recyclables on the bus, which is actually when I was trying to save the planet by recycling. But Rosa Parks case was about whole segregation. But in both scenarios, we were both trying to get our voice heard and both trying to change the law. Who was changing the segregation law? I was changing no recyclables on the bus law. So eventually my case got dropped, so it never went to the federal court like Rosa Parks case did, since it's still there. And in that book, it talks about the difference between Rosa Parks and mine and the similarity between both cases, just to show you what I was trying to do was no different than what Rosa Parks did. I will contact you when that book and the album's ready to be sold and stuff, so you could let your followers actually know about it.
Okay, that sounds great. All right. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining me and my guest, Michael, today. I hope that you have been inspired by his life. And just remember, we know who we are, but not who we will be. We'll see you next time.
One more thing, real quick. Very, real quick. I also build robotics and mechatronics. I don't know if any of you guys seen the show MacGyver. I could build something out of nothing like MacGyver can.
Okay.
All right. So
thank you,
not
Michael.
Many people could actually do that.
Right. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, SHELLEYKENOW.